This is actually our second session on our study in the book of Proverbs. We finished the Psalms after, well, many, many moons, I suppose, after about 3 years or more, taking one every Wednesday night, about 50 weeks of the year. So, yeah, I suppose it was 3 years or more. And now we are progressing right on over into Proverbs. I wanted to sort of just catch you up, and I realize a lot of people are sort of hit and miss this time of year, but I want you to think about the concepts that we introduced last time. First of all, what is a proverb? This is my definition. I thought it was pretty witty myself. A pithy, pointed, perceptive precept promoting wisdom. You can get through all the P's there. When you say something is pithy, what do you mean? What is pith? It's the thing you chew on. It's the, in a stalk, it is the fiber. In other words, when you get rid of all the juice and all the extras, the pith is the fibrous core of something. So it's boiling it down to its essence. That's what pith is. It's pithy. It's pointed. It's preceptive. Perceptive, I should say. It is, promoting wisdom. And our next question that we looked at is, what is wisdom? And I said it is the skillful application of knowledge, which then means it's the ability to discern what is the right course of action in a given situation. Wisdom and knowledge are really two different things. Knowledge is the data, but wisdom is the ability to use the data. And some people don't have much knowledge, but they are very wise in that they make very skillful use of the little bit of knowledge they have. Other folks go to school for a long time, get a lot of data. They're stupid as a fence post. You know, they have no wisdom. They don't know how to do anything. I sent my daughter, you know, to college, got a degree in electrical engineering, came time to wire the garage, and she couldn't do a thing. I couldn't figure what went wrong. Anyway, that's another story. Wanted my money back. Can't communicate with robots. That's it. But anyway, and the book of Proverbs is all about wisdom, as we will see. What is the prerequisite for wisdom? Right here in chapter 1 and in verse 7, we see the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and later on, the beginning of wisdom. The idea of the fear of the Lord is a sort of umbrella term for speaking of looking through the lenses of a worldview or a paradigm that respects, obeys, and worships the God of the Bible. In other words, you can be awfully smart in a lot of different areas, but when it comes to what truly matters, the spiritual side of life, unless you look through the grid, the worldview of a situation where God is sovereign, God is in control, and God is working His purposes out in life, then you never really are wise, because you really don't know from the very beginning what's binding everything together. I'm, of course, speaking from the standpoint of physics. Today there is a quest for a unified theory of physics. We have on the world we live in, general relativity works good, and on the subatomic level, quantum mechanics works good, but we don't know how to tie them together. We're still looking for the unifying theory. Well, when we turn to spiritual things, we do have something that ties it all together for us, and it is the fear of God. Let me go on before we get stuck here. And I want you to especially remember this. A proverb is not a promise, and that's very important. Because there are people I know in my past that have taken proverbs and tried to make promises out of them. If I do this, then God is obligated. God has promised He'll do this. No, He hadn't. A proverb is not a promise that admits no exceptions. A proverb is usually true. It's the probable outcome. In other words, if you're playing, this is a terrible illustration, but if you're playing poker down at one of the casinos, you better know the probabilities. What is the most likely outcome? And in that sense, a proverb will tell you the probable outcome, but not the exclusive outcome. There may well be some exceptions to the general rule. It's a general rule. But on the other hand, a proverb is an expression of our universal duty, without exception. In other words, regardless of the outcome, this is what you ought to be doing. It's sort of like saying, okay, if a farmer is going to harvest wheat in the fall or the spring, he's got to plant his seed. And where I came from, you planted your wheat in the fall, you reaped it in the spring. So if you want to have a harvest in the spring, you better plant your seed in the fall. That's a nice proverb. Is it universally true? Is it true without exception? No. Seed may not come up. But on the other hand, if you want to reap wheat in the spring, what do you better do in the fall? You better plant the seed. So in other words, there's a universal duty whether or not it follows, the consequence follows. Okay, I just keep reiterating that just because of my own sad experience dealing with folks. I'm following Dan Phillips' very good commentary on Proverbs as my major guide through all of this. And he lays out a 7 different kinds of Proverbs. That's what I want us to focus on tonight before we really get into the book. And actually, I'm not so sure that we're going to do this like we did the Psalms. You know, take it chapter by chapter, verse by verse. Number one, we'll be here for the rest of our life. And number two, the book of Proverbs really is not designed to be read that way. Now, there's certain sections in the beginning. We're going to see this long parable on wisdom. And that is sort of designed to be read in one sitting. But most of the book of Proverbs is simply a collection of these witty, pithy statements. And it's sort of like reading Poor Richard's Almanac. It wasn't intended for you to start at the beginning and read through it. These are like little, what would we say, thoughts for the day that you're going to find on your calendar in the morning. And in many, many cases, these proverbs don't seem to be linked together. There's no rhyme or reason why they fall the way they do. It's just like somebody tossed them in there and ran, the only order being random order, which I always thought was an oxymoron. But anyway, it's just like somebody just threw them together because there's no, at least my mind cannot see a pattern to why does this proverb follow this proverb. Oftentimes there's no theme. And so it makes you realize these never were intended to be read just back to back, but they're to be picked out and applied as the situation, as the circumstance demands. All right, let's get started. Synonymous proverbs. When we say something's a synonym, what do we mean by it? Same. You say the same thing two ways. Notice here in a proverb, oftentimes you have line A and line B. In a synonymous proverb, line B rewords, re-expresses the thought of line A. Now, what value would that be? Just off the top of your head, we have any deep thinkers here? What would be the good side of having a synonymous proverb? Repetition, and Charlie, I think, is sort of headed down the road I want to go, clarity. And why would that be clarity, Charlie? If a better chance of you understanding the wisdom if it's being expressed twice instead of once. What it does help us sometimes if we don't know a word, let's say you're just starting out, you're just beginning to read, and you don't know the word in the first line, chances are maybe the second line, you're going to see an expression here and you say, oh, well, now I know what that word means because it's synonymous with this word. Let me give an example here. This is out of Proverbs 11:26. The liberal. Now, most of y'all don't like being called liberals. But liberal has many meanings. And one of those meanings is generous. And so that's the expression here. The liberal soul shall be made fat. Now, I don't really mind if my soul gets fat. As long as my body doesn't, I'm okay with that, okay? So, but notice, the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. Now, do you see the sense in which this is a synonymous, each of those lines is saying something, and they're basically saying the same thing two different ways. In one case, the fellow who is generous and gives is himself reaps in return. Who was it I was talking to? Oh, it was Eric Strongoski Tuesday night. They were telling him he's been going through, he's had some health difficulties and some financial difficulties, and they're all telling him, well, you're just not giving enough. And if you'd give more, you'd get more, and so forth. Sort of, you know, make a deal with God. Well, I told him, you know, in general, number one, it's doesn't work that way. This quid pro quo legalism doesn't work. Because, but at the same time, there is a blessing that is promised for those that give. It just may not be in kind. Just because you give dollars, you may not get dollars back. And in fact, to be quite honest, you ought to hope you don't get dollars back. Because there are other blessings worth far, far more than dollars. There's a lot of folks with a lot of dollars that can't sleep at night. The fact you can sleep with a clear conscience in peace at night, that's how much money you're going to put on that. What's the price tag? And so you begin to see that, yes, God will repay, but he doesn't repay in kind, and he may not repay in time. That is, in fact, you ought to hope he doesn't. You ought to hope that this is storing up treasures in heaven, because the difference between treasures here and treasures there, you're never going to lose those. But everything you have here, you're either going to lose it or leave it. You're not going to take it with you. So in one way, you ought to be hoping that it is in eternity rather than the here and now. But anyway, that's expressing it. The liberal soul shall be made fat. How about that second line? He that waters shall be watered also himself. The more you pour out, the more God pours in. I tell you what, again, I don't believe in the health and wealth gospel and all this, but there is a sense in which very generous people always seem to have something to give away. In fact, some of my experience, you think, well, the generous people are poor people. It's those rich people that are stingy. No, some of the stingiest people I've ever met in my life were poor people. And some of the most generous people I've ever met were rich people. I think of one guy in particular that blessed me abundantly back in my early days of the ministry, and a very wealthy fella. But it seemed like he tried his best to give it all away, and he just couldn't do it. God wouldn't let him. Because the more he tried to give, the more God shoveled more in. So there's a sense in which that's what the proverb is saying. You can't outgive God, the old saying is. Okay, so you know what a synonymous. If you saw one, would you be, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's go on. Number two, proverbs of contrast. That's the opposite of a synonymous proverb. Line B, contrast. It's the opposite of line A. Now let's give an example. Proverbs 10:1b, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Now notice we have a contrast not only between the father and the mother, which is really not the big contrast here, but it's the fact that the foolish son brings gladness, whereas the foolish son brings heaviness. Is that true? Huh? Is that true? Yeah, it sure is. It will do it. And so there is that wisdom has that benefit of making the parent glad. Foolishness in a child makes the parent sad. Okay, let's go a little further. Proverbs of comparison. This is exactly what it sounds like. Notice in this case, you're saying line B is like line A is like line B. What if that's the case, if you're making a comparison, what words would you expect to spot in a proverb like that? Like, as. Those are the two words that you almost always are going to encounter. And they may not be stated. They may just be implied. But the idea is there. This is like this. Let's give an example here. Proverbs 25:25. As cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. Notice like and as don't appear here, but you have the idea. It's like that. What is that proverb expressing? What does good news from a far country do for you? Refreshes, it cheers you up, right? You get a letter from some relative back in some place. They're not good news. No, that's the problem. I got, You know the Christmas letters that people send out? I got one from some good friends in Wyoming yesterday. I don't know where this letter went, but somebody had scrawled in big letters Mississippi across it. I guess it got sent to Michigan or somewhere and stayed in the dead letter box for a couple of months. But it eventually made its way. And all the way from Wyoming, here comes this Christmas letter from my dear friends out there. And yeah, it cheered me up. It was of refreshing as like a breath of fresh air. And so you get the idea of a parable of that where you have a synonym, a contrast, and then this kind of a proverb where we say it's like this. It's an example. Now we have satirical proverbs. And this is interesting. When you say something's a satire, what do you mean? When I was growing up, my favorite magazine was Mad Magazine. My buddies and I, we managed to snooker my English teacher. She was our class sponsor. Into letting, it was Michael Holmes, Ronnie Honey, and me, go to Greenville, ostensibly to get some class supplies. Greenville was about 20 minutes away. It was the biggest town around. And, actually, we went to Greenville to get a Mad Magazine. That's what we were going for. And we managed to play the principal against the English teacher, and they, let us go. And, I just loved the humor of Mad Magazine. I still like it. I haven't grown up a bit. That's satire. So what is satire doing? Saturday Night Live. You're making fun. You're mocking something, right? And you would think, well, the Bible never does that. God wouldn't do that. Well, I'm thinking of Isaiah, where he's prophesying about the guy that goes out in the woods and cuts down a tree. And what does he do with one half of it? He makes him an idol and props it up, worships it. The other half, he makes firewood and cooks his supper with it. And that's satire. That's mocking the foolishness of the idolater. Well, let's give an example here. It's a humorous saying that mocks certain conduct. And this is a good one right here. Proverbs 19:24. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom. And the word is terrible translation in the King James. The word means a bowl or a dish. The slothful man hideth his hand in his dish and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Y'all aren't laughing. I mean, that's hilarious. This is the lazy man who is so lazy that he puts his hand down in the bowl. It's sort of like he falls asleep. He's that lazy. He will not bring the food up to his mouth. I mean, to me, that's funny. That's why I like Mad Magazine. That's funny stuff right there. Okay. You get the picture. All right, then there's Proverbs of Evaluation, and it tells us the worth, the esteem that we are to place on certain things. Let's look at this. In this case, line A, the first line, is better than line B. In other words, you're comparing the value of two things. Let's take a look at one. Proverbs 15:16. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. All right? Notice we're saying that, okay, we've got two possibilities. I can have a little or a lot, but I can have a little with the fear of the Lord, or I can have a lot with trouble. And of the two, it is much better to have a little with the fear of the Lord than it is to have a lot with trouble. Right? Now, you would hope that people would realize this. That way we wouldn't spend our life just trying to amass money, amass stuff to make sure we've got a lot that if you got a little with the fear of the Lord, you got a lot. You got a valuable commodity. All right? Then Proverbs of Consequence. Notice this. Line B is what happens when you do line A. That is what parents threaten their kids with all the time. A parable of consequence. Do this. This is what's going to happen to you. Here's an example. Proverbs 16:5. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord, though hand joined in hand, he shall not be unpunished. You get the sequence of events? The man who is proud is an abomination, and he will not go unpunished. Here's the consequence of the action. Consequence in line B, the action in line A. All right? Then there is synthetic proverbs. This is a little bit, when we say synthetic, what do you suppose we mean? when you say something synthetic, what would be the opposite of synthetic? Real, authentic, I would say, is the opposite of synthetic. Synthetic means it's manufactured, strung together. All right? Line B then extends the thought of line A. In other words, there's not a synonym going on here. There's not a contrast or not consequences, but that line B is simply further expanding what you have already said in line A. An example of that, Proverbs 15:3, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. Notice the second phrase, line B, then simply expands upon what you have already said in line A. All right? So there we got them. We have seven types of Proverbs in it. And again, I'm using Dan Phillips' classification, and there probably might be others or fewer, depending on how you wanted to think about this and organize it. But now it comes your turn to get into the picture here. I want you to turn to the book of Proverbs, and I want you to find me an example of one. You don't have to do all seven, but find a proverb that fits one of these classifications. Yes, sir? Proverb of satire. Where's that found? In Proverbs. Well, that's pretty good. As the door turns on its hinges, so the slothful on his bed. All he does, I think that you made that up. It's like the slothful man. Okay. Slothful man just rolls over in bed. He can't get out of the bed, just like the door swinging on its hinges. That's good. And that's satire. That's mocking the behavior of the slothful man. You got one? Now you got to figure out what class it fits now, okay?
I think it's
okay.
But he that is slow in anger.
I think you're right. You got a small print. I see. Say that again. What was the first word? The wrathful man stirreth up strife.
But
he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. And that is precisely a proverb of contrast. You see the behavior of the wrathful man in the first line, the behavior of the peaceful, peacemaking man in the second line.
Oh.
She can't read the small print. Where did you find those Bibles? Okay. Proverbs 15:18. That's a good one. Okay, Steve? Yeah, yeah. Better. Well, in a sense, you see number six up there? Proverbs of evaluation. Oh, it's five. Okay. Yeah. The idea is what? Better to live in the corner of a roof than with an angry and contentious woman.
We wouldn't
know. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the idea of evaluating two different circumstances and saying it'd be far better off to live in a corner up on the rooftop. Or as we would say, the doghouse. Okay. Keep looking. Tim, that's the idea of consequence. You're exactly right. It's not a promise. There are exceptions, but that is the normal. Okay? Keep reading. You got another one, Steve? I see you looking up here.
Yeah.
Not yet? Okay, Chris? The plan of a man, or the heart of a man plans his steps, but the Lord establishes his steps. In other words, the old saying, man proposes, God disposes. That's a parable of contrast. Man makes his plans, but it's the plans of God that prevail. Okay? Yes, Jody? Number seven. Let's say it again. Say it and I'll repeat it. The blessing of the Lord brings wealth. That's line A. And he adds no trouble to it. And notice that the second line, line B, is simply adding, improving, filling in the blanks of line A. And that's exactly what a synthetic proverb is. Okay, let's analyze that. That is a very well-known proverb. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and in all thy ways. And notice this one doesn't go line A and line B. It's longer. You got to take almost two lines together. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart. In all thy ways acknowledge him. And lean not unto your own understanding. But in all... Wait a minute, I'm getting it messed up.
Yeah,
lean not to your own understanding. So that is a contrast, right? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean to your own understanding. And what is that telling you about your heart? That the heart, in the way the Bible uses it, is not so much the organ of feeling, emotion, as it is the organ of thinking. And we use brain, but the scriptures often use heart. Mm-hmm. So you're not leaning, you trust in the Lord with your heart, your understanding. You lean not to your own understanding. In all thy ways, now we've got a different thing, don't we? In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall bring it to pass. What would you call that part? Consequence? Yeah. So you see that some of them don't quite, you know, they're not quite as simple as the others. That one's really got four lines to it. Somebody else, James, what you got? Take my instruction rather than silver and rather than choice gold. And you call that what? To silver and gold. Okay, I see your logic there. Yeah, that one's not quite as cut and dried. Say that again. I mean, yeah, it's almost the it is in each, but it's in each line. This rather than this. This rather than this. Rather than this. Rather than that. Yeah, yeah. Okay, Beth. Say the last line, as smoke is to the eyes, so is a sluggard to those who sent him. Boy, that's a good one. That's almost satire, really. But no, I think you're right. It is a parable of a proverb of comparison. And you're saying, now, why would you use the expression smoke to the eyes? Irritant. Yeah. And the slothful man to the man that sent him is also an irritant. Yeah, how true. Okay, Danny. All right. May there be no death. Uh-huh. That's right. Right. Say the whole thing again. On the way of the path, may there be no death. Yeah. No death. No D-E-A-T-H. No death. Which would be the parallel thought of life. On the road to righteousness, there's life. And on that this way has no death. Yeah. Synonymous ideas. Okay. One more. Who wants to be last? All right, David. Yeah. Yeah. Consequence is the first thing that jumps in my mind. Say it again. Let me say it out loud. If you see a man who excels in his work, he will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. So yeah, the consequence of his excelling in his work then puts him in a place of prominence. Yeah. Right. In the second line. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, well, you see that there are all kinds of exceptions and all kinds of variations, and that's part of the appeal of a proverb, is that it is almost in some cases intended to be an enigma or a riddle that you sort of unwrap and you sort of unfold. In some cases, you get wisdom, you learn something from it. In other cases, you get a good laugh out of something. In some cases, it helps your vocabulary to expand, that you're beginning to see how the Bible uses certain parallel words and thoughts to express itself. As we sort of wrap this up tonight, at least this section, and you begin to see why I don't think this is going to lend itself to a verse-by-verse study. This is more smorgasbord. We may do some more of this as we go, because I think it's helpful for you to sort of get your feet wet looking at this and finding some examples that fit these various categories. It's very helpful for us to sort of organize our thought and then realize what we're seeing. We tend, you know, when we deal with animals, we classify things. It helps us sort these things out in our mind, and so it is with this. At the end of the day, and keep in mind that if these proverbs, let me take the contrary side a moment. We said they're not promises. They're not covenant promises that are true without exception. And if they were, we really ought to spend all our time in Proverbs and ignore the rest of the Bible, if these are covenant promises. But instead, what they are is simply a observation of a wise man of the way life works. And it's why the young man, and we see in especially this first section, and we'll get into that a little bit next time, where it's like a mother or a father, and some say mother, some say father, but Sophia is usually a feminine name, that's wisdom. And it's giving wisdom to a son who is inexperienced. You say, what is wisdom? It's making good choices. How do you get wisdom? Making bad choices. You know, some of us got wisdom by the process of elimination. We tried everything else. We finally narrowed down, yeah, this works. Well, in a sense, these proverbs are the wisdom of the ages of a wise man, Solomon, who is sharing his ability to look at life and perceive the way it works and then put it into a witty, pithy statement. And so there's a lot of benefits from this. These are things that go with you. And of course, the fact that they're witty means that you can remember them. They stick with you. These word pictures, I'm still thinking about the smoke in the eyes. Yeah, that's irritating. And those pictures stick with you. They become excellent ways to express yourself. So anyway, we'll come back here. We'll go a little further and plow a little more deeply.